All right, good to see everybody. So just a few days left till Janmashtami. Janmashtami is next Friday. Today in the U.S., it's Saturday. And for those of you in New Zealand, Australia, and Fiji, actually today in the U.S. is Saturday. Today's Saturday. And for those of you in Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji, it's Sunday. And anyway, let's chant. Jaya Radhe, Jaya Krishna, Jaya Vrindavan.
Shana does.
Vishnupad, Padamahansa, Parvatikacharya, Olsutada, Satashi, Shimad. His divine grace, Abhaya Chanana, Bhaktivedanta, Gosami, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai. ISKCON, Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai. Anantakoti, Vaishnava, Vrinda, Kijai. Namacharya, Srila Haridas, Thakur, Kijai. Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindigajai Shishi Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagadasami Kijai Yamunamai Kajai, Shimati Dalasa Devi Kajai, Samaveda Bhakta, Vrindi Kajai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Gurwin Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Kajai Nama Om. Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vananda Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharni Nivasesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarni. Alright, so let's read the translation. All glories to Radha Krishna and the divine forest of Vrindavana. All glories to the three presiding deities of Vrindavan, Sri Govinda, Gopinath, and Madan Mohan. All glories to Shamakun, Radhakun, Govardhan Hill, and the Yamuna River, Kalindi. All glories to the great forest known as Mahavana. All glories to Keshigat, the Vamsivat tree, and the 12 forests of Braja. At these places, the son of Nanda, Sri Krishna, performed all of his pastimes. All glories to Krishna's divine father and mother, Nanda and Yashoda. All glories to the coward boys headed by Sri Dhamma. All glories to the cows and calves of Braja. All glories to Radha's divine father and mother, Rishabhanu, and the beautiful Kirtida. All glories to Purnamasi, the mother of son Dipani Muni. All glories to the young coward maidens of Braja. All glories to Gopishra Shiva, who resides in Vrindavan in order to protect the holy Dham. All glories to Krishna's funny Brahmin friend, Madhubango. All glories to Ramagat, where Lord Balaram performed his rasa dance. All glories to Lord Balaram, the son of Rohini. All glories to all the residents of Vrindavanam. All glories to the wives of the proud Vedic Brahmanas. All glories to the wives of the Kaliya serpent. Through pure devotion, they all obtain the lotus feet of Lord Govinda. All glories to the place where the rasa dance of Shri Krishna was performed. All glories to Radha and Shama. All glories to the divine rasa dance, which is the most beautiful of all Lord Krishna's pastimes. All glories to the mellow of conjugal love, which is the most excellent of all rasas, and is propagated and brought by Shri Krishna in the form of the divine Padakya Bhava. Mm-hmm. Remembering the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda's consort, Sri Janava Devi, this very fallen and lowly servant of Krishna sings the Sankirtana holy name. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami Ki Jai. So we are continuing with our reading study of Krishna book. So we're on the second chapter of the Krishna book right now, sort of like two-thirds through the purport. And the second chapter deals with, what? The prayers by the demigods. And Prabhupada, in this particular chapter, elaborates, and actually Prabhupada and Krishna, because Prabhupada is repeating what Krishna has said in the, or what has been written in the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. In this particular chapter, Krishna, Prabhupada elaborate on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and somewhat Mayavadi philosophy versus the personal philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And here the demigods' prayers are elaborating on that too. Okay, on that happy note, let's continue so we can finish this chapter and go on to the third chapter. So, Omagana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, let's share the screen. Give me 1 second. And here we go. Right in the middle of the purport, at the right place. So it's philosophy, and I guess I should take time to explain this philosophical, or the basic philosophical points being made here. I shouldn't try to go too quickly. It is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita that to realize Brahman identification is not all. Brahman identification may help one become joyful without material attachment or detachment and to achieve the platform of equanimity. But after this stage, one has to take to devotional service. So, of course, Brahman identification means to understand your spirit. You're not the body. That doesn't really give you any bliss. That's just the Sat aspect of the Lord, the eternal aspect of the Lord. The Lord is Satchit Ananda. When one takes a devotional service after being elevated to the platform of Brahman realization, he is then admitted into the spiritual kingdom for permanent residence in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the result of devotional service. Those who are devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead never fall down like the impersonalists. Even if the devotees fall down, they remain affectionately attached to their Lord. Now here Prabhupada is referring to devotees who are not completely pure. They can meet all kinds of obstacles on the path of devotional service and freely without any fear they can surmount such obstacles. Because of their surrender, they are certain that Krishna will always protect them. As it is promised by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, my devotees are never vanquished. So of course you have examples of devotees in the Shastras who fell down, such as Bharat Maharaj, who was situated on the platform of Bhava, which is the preliminary stage before Prema, and he fell down. Actually, it's the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I was just reading that Bharat Maharaj, in one sense, did that to set an example for us how dangerous Maya was. Anyway, in another sense, he actually did get attached to the deer. As many ways of looking at that particular pastime. Our dear Lord, the demigods continued, you have appeared in your original eternal form of unalloyed goodness for the welfare of all living entities within this material world. Taking advantage of your appearance, all of them can now very easily understand the nature and form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Persons who belong to the four divisions of the social order, the Brahmacharis, Grahasas, Vanaprasas, and Sannyasis, can all take advantage of your appearance. Now, this is another point Prabhupada made, that one of the reasons Krishna comes down or appears in this material world, in addition to, you know, destroying the miscreants, establishing religious principles, protecting the devotees, is to show people what the nature of God is so they don't engage in speculation. If Krishna didn't come down, then people would just have to speculate, and generally their speculation would be rather anthropomorphic. In other words, they would project what they think, or what they are experiencing in this world, to the realm of the absolute. Just like, let's say in Christianity, for example, people depict Jesus Christ in different ways according to the way they look. If they're in Europe, they depict Jesus Christ as having blonde hair and blue eyes. And if they're in the Middle East, they depict Jesus Christ as having curly, brown hair and brown or black eyes. You know, anyway. And swarthy in complexion. So those who in Scandinavia, they want to depict Jesus Christ as a Scandinavian. You know, light skin, blonde hair, blue eyes, like that. So Krishna comes down to show us what he's actually like so we can become attracted to him. Otherwise, it would be rather iconoclastic. We would actually invent a form and meditate on a form and wouldn't make any spiritual advancement as a result. Dear Lord, husband of the goddess of fortune, devotees who are dovetailed in your service do not fall down from their high position like those of the impersonalists. Being protected by you, the devotees are able to traverse over the heads of many of Maya's commanders in chief. Sounds frightening. Who can always put stumbling blocks in the path of liberation. Dear Lord, you appear in your eternal transcendental form for the benefit of the living entities so that they can see you face to face and offer their worshipful sacrifices by ritualistic performance of the Vedas, mystic meditation, and devotional services recommended in the scriptures. Dear Lord, if you did not appear in your eternal transcendental form full of bliss and knowledge, a form which can eradicate all kinds of speculative ignorance about your position, then all people would simply speculate about you according to their respective modes of nature. That's exactly what I just said. Wow. The people would respect, would speculate about Krishna, because they were under particular modes of nature, or they looked a particular way, or they came from a particular culture. And so we understand that Krishna conscious knowledge and knowledge of the Absolute, it descends, doesn't ascend. The ascending process is speculation. The descending process is dharma to sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma, an understanding of Krishna, can only be given by Krishna. The appearance of Krishna is the answer to all imaginative iconography. That's exactly what I just said. I just said iconoclast, which is the person who engages in imaginative iconography of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone imagines the form of the Supreme Personality of God according to his mode of material nature. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord is the oldest person. Therefore, a section of religionists imagine that God must be very old. And therefore they depict the form of the Lord as a very old man. Like there's this famous picture in the Sistine Chapel where God is reaching out to implant life in Adam. He basically looks like he's ready for, that's an old people's home. But it's not like, you know, gray hair and everything. But we understand, Navayovanam cha. But in the same, But in the same Brahma Samhita, that is contradicted. Although he's the oldest of living entities, he has his eternal form. It's fresh youth. That's Navayovanam. The exact words used in this connection in the Srimad Bhagavatam are Vijnanam, Ajnana, Vida, Pamarjanam. Vijnana means transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vijnana is also experienced knowledge. That's realized knowledge. Transcendental knowledge has to be accepted by the descending process of disciplic succession. as Brahma represents the knowledge of Krishna in the Brahma Sanhita. The Brahma Sanhita is Vijnanam, as realized by Brahma's transcendental experience, and in that way he presented the form and pastimes of Krishna in the transcendental world. The reason it's Vijnanam is that he saw Krishna, he saw the transcendental abode, which was revealed to him after his mature meditation. It was direct experience, as described in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prachaksha Bhagavan Dharmyam, Sushukam Kartamabhyam. This knowledge is Ajnana Vidapamarajanam, that which can smash all kinds of speculation and ignorance. People are imagining the form of the Lord. Sometimes he has no form, sometimes he has form, according to their different imaginations. But the presentation of Krishna in the Brahma Sanhita is Vijnanam, scientific experience knowledge given by Lord Brahma and accepted by Lord Chaitanya. There's no doubt about it, Krishna's form, Krishna's flute, Krishna's color, everything is reality. Here it is said that this Vijnanam is always defeating all kinds of speculative knowledge. Therefore, without your appearing as Krishna, as you are, neither Ajnana, Vidapamarjanam, destruction of the nations of speculative knowledge, nor Vijnanam would be realized. In other words, your appearance will vanquish the ignorance of speculative knowledge and establish the real experienced knowledge of authorities like Lord Brahma. Men influenced by the three modes of material nature imagine their own God according to the modes of material nature. In this way, God is presented in various ways, but your appearance will establish what the real form of God is. In other words, as Prabhupada said, if you want to love God, you have to know what he looks like, what he does, all these different factors. Otherwise, talking about love of God is simply mental speculation, word jugglery, and has no basis in fact. Because you have to know someone before you can love them. And if God didn't come down, how would you know him? Therefore, how could you love him? And you may love what he does. You know, I love that he gives me prasadam all the time. Or I love that he lets me have fun in the material world. I don't love that he gives me misery. But I mean, you can love what he does in the material world, but you can't love him personally. I mean, you can feel a sense of awe and reverence. That is true. But that's not quite love. You know, love means the attraction and the desire to please someone. The highest blunder committed by the impersonalist is to think that when the incarnation of God comes, he accepts the form of matter and the mode of goodness. Actually, the form of Krishna and Narayan is transcendental to any material idea. Even the greatest impersonalist, Shankaracharya, has admitted Narayana Puro Yaktat. Material creation is caused by the avyakta, manifestation of matter, or the non-phenomenal total reservoir of matter. That means the total reservoir of matter cannot be perceived. That's the point. That's what non-phenomenal. But Krishna is transcendental to that material conception. That is expressed in the Srimad Bhagavatam as Vishuddha Sattva, or transcendental goodness. It is not material goodness. Material goodness is simply self-centered, just like passion and ignorance. He does not belong to the material mode of goodness, and he is above the position of material goodness. He belongs to the transcendental, eternal status of bliss and knowledge. That's Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. My dear Lord, when you appear in your different incarnations, you take different names and forms according to different situations. Lord Krishna is your name because you are all attractive. You are called Shyamashunda because of your transcendental beauty. Shama means blackish. Yet it is said that you are more beautiful than thousands of cupids. Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobha. Although you appear in a color which is compared to the blackish cloud, because you are a transcendental absolute, your beauty is many, many times more attractive than the delicate body of Cupid. Sometimes you are called Giridhari because you lifted the hill known as Govardhan. You are sometimes called Nandanandana or Vasudev or Vasudev or Devaki Nandana because you appear as the son of Maharaj Nanda or Vasudev or Devaki. Impersonalists think that your many names or forms are given according to a particular type of work and quality because they accept you from the position of a material observer. So these names like Nandanandana, Devaki Nandana, Yashoda Nandana, these are all eternal names because they describe Krishna in terms of his relationship with his pure devotees, his eternally situated, eternally liberated, Niksha Parshadas. Our dear Lord, the way of understanding is not by to study your absolute nature, form, and activities by mental speculation. One must engage himself in devotional service. Then one can understand your absolute nature and your transcendental form, name, and qualities. In other words, it has to be revealed. Only by devotion. Because Krishna is a person. He's not going to reveal himself just because you do some rituals. Just like in any personal relationship, if you want to get close to someone, if you just do something ritualistically, or even say ritualistically without any feeling, I love you. You're like a robot. You're not going to get close to them. It has to be done from the heart. Devotional service is executed from the heart or with the heart. Actually, only a person who has a little taste for the service of your lotus feet can understand your transcendental nature, form, and qualities. Others may go on speculating for millions of years, but it is not possible for them to understand even a single part of your actual position. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, cannot be understood by the non-devotees because there is a curtain of yoga maya which covers Krishna's actual features, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.25, Naham Prakasha Sarvasha, and the rest of the verses, yoga maya samavrata buddhna yam navijananti. That I'm not revealed to the rascals. They cannot understand my transcendental nature. Krishna himself has to decide to reveal himself. It's the personal thing. You cannot just study and understand Krishna. Krishna has to appear or give you the intelligence, as he says in the 15th chapter of the Gita. Well, actually, yeah, also Madhakshmita again on the phone, I'm trying, it's 15th chapter, but also the 10th chapter. Tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. The Lord says, I'm not exposed to anyone and everyone. When Krishna came, he was actually present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and everyone saw him. But not everyone could understand that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Still, everyone who died in his presence attained complete liberation from material bondage and was transferred to the spiritual world. So, of course, many of the people who were transferred to the spiritual world, they were transferred to the impersonal Brahma-jyoti. And then they had to come back. So that's also the spiritual world. You know, there's different aspects of the spiritual world. There's the Brahman effulgence, and there's the planets, there's the Vaikuntha planets, and then ultimately there's Krishna Loka. O Lord, the impersonalists or non-devotees cannot understand your name is identical with your form. Since the Lord is absolute, there's no difference between his name and his actual form. In the material world, there's a difference between form and name. The mango fruit is different from the name of mango. One cannot taste a simple thing that we actually explain to people all the time when you're preaching. One cannot taste the mango fruit simply by chanting, mango, mango, mango. Usually I give the example of mango because people don't relate to mangoes in the United States. I say, water, 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 you can't quench your thirst. But the devotee knows that there is no difference between the name and the form of the Lord. Chants, what do they chant? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. And he realizes that he is always in Krishna's company. Fantastic. For persons who are not very advanced in absolute knowledge of the Supreme, Lord Krishna exhibits his transcendental pastimes. Such persons can simply think of the pastimes of the Lord and get full benefit. Since there is no difference between the transcendental name and form of the Lord, there is no difference between the transcendental pastimes and the form of the Lord. And that was my experience when I first got a Krishna book, before I actually was doing so much chanting. I became attracted. For those who are less intelligent, like women laborers of mercantile class, the great sage Vyasa, that's all of us actually, everybody, in Kalo Shudra Sambhava, everybody. The great sage Vyasadeva wrote in the Mahabharata, Krishna is present in his different activities. The Mahabharata is history, and simply by studying, hearing, and memorizing the transcendental activities of Krishna recounted therein, the less intelligent can also gradually rise to the standard of pure devotees. The pure devotees who are always absorbed in the thought of the transcendental lotus feet of Krishna and are always engaged in devotional service and full Krishna consciousness are never to be considered to be in the material world. Srila Rupa Goswami has explained that those who are always engaged in Krishna consciousness with body, mind, and activities are to be considered liberated even within this body. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord have already transcended the material position. Amchiyo, Vyavicharene, Bhakti Yogena, Sevatai, Sagwanan, Samati, Chaitan, Brahma, Bhuyaya, Kalpate. That's Bhagavad Gita. When engaged in devotional service is transcendental. Krishna appears in order to give a chance to both the devotees and the non-devotees for realization of the ultimate goal of life. The devotees get the direct chance to see him and worship him. Those who are not on that platform get the chance to become acquainted with his activities and thus become elevated to the same position. Our dear Lord, O Supreme Controller, when you appear on earth, all the demons like Kamsa and Jarasandha will be vanquished and all good fortune will be ushered into the world. When you walk on the globe, your lotus feet will impress on the ground the marks of your souls, such as the flag, trident, and thunderbolt. Thus you will grace both the earth and us on the heavenly planets, who shall see these marks. Our dear Lord, the demigods continued, you are unborn. Therefore, we do not find any reason for your appearance other than for your pleasurable pastimes. In other words, the reason Krishna actually comes down is to have pleasure. And actually, as far as killing the demons, protecting the devotees, establishing religious principles, that can be done by Krishna's energies or Krishna's devotees. Prabhupada makes that very clear. So if you look, you want to understand the real reason, like the real reason for Lord Chaitanya coming down, is he wanted to engage in the pastime of understanding Radharani's love for him. He wanted to see himself from her perspective and enjoy from her perspective. Although the reason for the appearance of the Lord is stated in Bhagavad Gita, he descends just to give protection to the devotees and vanquish the non-devotees. Actually, he descends for his pleasure meeting with the devotees, not really to vanquish the non-devotees. That's what I just said. I seem to be getting ahead of what Prabhupada is explaining. The non-devotees can be vanquished simply by one kick of material nature. Kick. The actions and reactions of material nature, creation, maintenance, and annihilation are being carried automatically. But simply by taking shelter of your holy name, the devotees are fully protected because your holy name and your personality are non-different. The protection of the devotees and the annihilation of the non-devotees are actually not the business of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he descends, it is just for his transcendental pleasure. There cannot be any other reason for his appearance. This is a very important point. Very important point. We're talking about primary reasons for the Lord's advent. And secondary reasons. The secondary reasons occur because of the primary reasons. Because the secondary reasons could be carried out in other ways. Remember that. The secondary reasons could be carried out in other ways. Secondary reason means like establishing religious principles, protecting the devotees, annihilating, you know, the rascals. That's secondary. But primary is his pleasure. For the sake of the devotees he comes, and for his own pleasure to interact with his devotees and attract people that he wants to attract to back to the spiritual world. Krishna wants us to go back to be with him more than we want to be with him. He's hankering for our association. That's amazing. Unfortunately, we're not hankering for his association. Our dear Lord, you are appearing as the best of the Yadav dynasty, and we are offering a respectful, humble obeisances at your lotus feet. Before this appearance, you also appear as the fish incarnation, as the horse incarnation, as the tortoise incarnation, or as the half-man, half-lion incarnation, Nrisimhadeva, as the boar incarnation, Varaha, as the swan incarnation, Hamsa, as King Ramchandra, as Parashuram, and as many other incarnations. You appear just to protect the devotees, and we request in you, in your present appearances, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, to give us similar protection all over the three worlds and remove all obstacles for the peaceful execution of our lives. Dear Mother Devaki, within your womb is the Supreme Personality of Godhead appearing along with all of his planetary extensions. He is the original Personality of Godhead appearing for our welfare, Therefore, you should not be afraid of your brother, the king of Boja. That's, of course, Kamsa. Your son, Lord Krishna, who is the original personality of Godhead, will appear for the protection of the pious Yadav dynasty. The Lord is appearing not alone, but accompanied by his immediate plenary portion, Baladev. Devaki was very much afraid of her brother Kamsa because he had already killed so many of her children. So she was very anxious about Krishna. In the Vishnu Purana, it is stated that in order to pacify Devaki, all the demigods, along with their wives, used to visit her to encourage her not to be afraid that her son would be killed by Kamsa. So she was actually continually visited by the demigods. Interesting. Krishna, who was within her womb, was to appear not only to diminish the burden of the world, but specifically to protect the interests of the Yadu dynasty and certainly to protect Devaki and Vasudev. It is understood that Krishna had been transferred from the mind of Vasudev to the mind of Devaki, no seminal discharge, and from there to her womb. Thus, Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was worshipable for all the demigods. After thus worshipping the transcendental form of the Lord, all the demigods with Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva placed in front departed for their heavenly abodes. So too, we finished chapter 2. And so we have time, we can go on to chapter 3. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second chapter of Krishna prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. And chapter 3 is the birth of Lord Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his births and activities are all transcendental. That's the fourth chapter. And the one who factually understands them becomes immediately eligible to be transferred to the spiritual world. So that janma karma chami divyam evam yo viti tapatha chaptua deham puna janma naiti mam eti sorjana. He doesn't have to take birth again. The Lord's appearance or birth is not like that of an ordinary man who is forced to accept a material body according to his past deeds. The Lord's appearance is explained in the second chapter. He appears out of his own sweet pleasure. When the time was mature for the appearance of the Lord, the constellations became very auspicious. The astrological influence of the star known as Rohini was predominant. This star is considered to be very auspicious and under the direct supervision of Brahma. According to the astrological conclusion, besides the proper situation of the stars, there are auspicious and inauspicious moments due to the different situations of the different planetary systems. Now we're talking astrology. At the time of Krishna's birth, the planetary systems were automatically adjusted so that everything became auspicious. And actually, in this way, using modern scientific technology, we can determine the exact moment and year of Krishna's appearance, you know, thousands of years ago. That's interesting, isn't it? And also the scientists have utilized computer technology to determine the exact time of the Battle of Kurukshetra, because there's different astrological, astronomical phenomena that are mentioned in the Mahabharata. So based on that, they take the computer and go back through the night skies thousands of years and find out when all those phenomena were present. And they can determine the exact time. At that time, in all directions, east, west, south, north, everywhere, there was an atmosphere of peace and prosperity. There were auspicious stars visible in the sky and on the surface of the earth. In all towns and villages and pasturing grounds and within the minds of everyone, there were signs of good fortune. So in the Vedic system, there actually is a whole science of signs. Like if a bird flies this way in front of you or that way in front of you, it means something different. Or if a deer crosses in front of you or a deer doesn't cross in front of you, it means something. I mean, or if your right eye is blinking and you're a man, it's auspicious. And your right eye is blinking and you're a lady, it's inauspicious. There's so many different signs. There's a whole science of them. If you read the Ramayana, you'll see that when Ravana went out to fight with Lord Rama in the final instance, his left eye was just like twitching like crazy. And as a result, he ignored it. He thought, take care of bad fortune. But that was his demise. The rivers were flowing full of waters, and the lakes were very beautifully decorated with lotus flowers. The forests were full with beautiful birds and peacocks. All the birds within the forest began to dance along with their the sweet voices, and the peacocks began to dance with their consorts. The wind blew very pleasantly, carrying the aroma of different flowers and greatly pleasing the sense of touch. At home, the brahmanas, who were accustomed to offering sacrifices in the fire, found their homes very pleasant for offerings. Due to disturbances created by the demoniac kings, the sacrificial fire had been almost stopped in the house of brahmanas, but now they could find the opportunity to start the fire peacefully. Being forbidden to offer sacrifices, the brahmanas had been very much distressed in mind, intelligence, and activities, but just on the point of Krishna's appearance, automatically their minds became full of joy because they could hear transcendental vibrations from the sky proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So traditionally, the Brahmins would actually keep the sacred fire going and do a fire sacrifice every day. Wow. I'm glad we have the holy name so we don't have to do all these complicated things every day. Fire sacrifices. Life is complicated enough as it is. Actually, I believe in the KISS philosophy, keep it simple, sadhu. The denizens of the Kandavra and Kinara planets began to sing, and the denizens of Siddha Loka and the planets of the Charanas began to offer prayers in the service of the Personality of Godhead. In the heavenly planets, the angels and their wives, along with the Vidyadharas and their wives, began to dance. They all knew Krishna was coming. The great sages and the demigods, being pleased, began to shower flowers. At the seashore, there was a sound of mild waves, and above the sea there were clouds in the sky which began to thunder very pleasingly, not heavy. When things were adjusted like this, Lord Vishnu was residing in the heart of every living entity, appeared in the darkness of night as the Supreme Personality of Godhead before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demigoddesses. So when we say he appeared as the Supreme Personality of God, he appeared with four hands, the Vishnu respect. Appearance, which Prabhupada is going to talk about. The appearance of, because that's to pacify Devaki, saying, you know, it's actually God, or he's actually God, or I'm actually God. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time could be compared to the rising of a full moon over the eastern horizon. The objection may be raised that since Lord Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, there could be no rising of the full moon. Answer to this, it may be said that Lord Krishna appeared on the dynasty, which is in the hierarchy of the moon. Therefore, although the moon was incomplete on that night because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty, wherein the moon is himself the original person, the moon was in an overjoyous condition, so by the grace of Krishna, he could appear just like a full moon. Of course, Balaram appeared on the Purnima, which is the full moon. And an astronomical treatise by the name of Komunikya, the constellations at the time of the appearance of Lord Krishna are very nicely described. It is confirmed that the child born at that auspicious moment was the Supreme Brahman, or the Absolute Truth. That's why I just talked about the astrological or astronomical formations. Vasudeva saw that wonderful child born as a baby with four hands holding a conch shell, glove, disc, and lotus flower, decorated with the mark of Shivatsa. That's the little hair that marks the Lakshmi. Wearing the jeweled necklace of Kastuba stone, dressed in yellow silk, appearing dazzling like a bright blackish cloud, wearing a helmet bedecked with the Vaidurya stone, valuable bracelets, earrings, and similar other ornaments all over his body, and beautified by an abundance of hair on his head. No child is born like that normally. I mean, you don't find a child who's just born has a helmet, has a jewelry and all these things. No, that's God, because when he comes, he doesn't become God, as Prabhupada will talk about later on in the story of Putana. He is God. Due to the extraordinary features of the child, Vasudeva was struck with wonder. How could a newly born child be so decorated? Vasudeva could therefore understand that Lord Krishna had now appeared, and he became overpowered by the occasion. Vasudeva very humbly wondered that although he was an ordinary living entity conditioned by material nature, was externally imprisoned by Kamsa, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna, was appearing as a child in his home, exactly in his original position. No earthly child is born with four hands decorated with ornaments and nice clothing, fully equipped with all the signs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Over and over again, Vasudeva glanced at his child, and he considered how to celebrate this auspicious moment. Generally, when a male child is born, he thought, people observe the occasion with jubilant celebrations. In my home, although I'm in prison, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has taken birth. How many millions and millions of times should I be prepared to observe this auspicious ceremony? When Vasudeva, who is also called Anaka Dundubi, was looking at his newborn baby, he was so happy that he wanted to give many thousands of cows in charity. The Brahmins, according to the Vedic system, whenever there is an auspicious ceremony in the Kshatriya king's palace, out of joy the king gives many things in charity. Cows decorated with golden ornaments are delivered to the Brahmins and sages. Vasudeva wanted to perform a charitable ceremony to celebrate Krishna's appearance, but because he was shackled within the walls of Kansa's prison, this was not possible. Instead, within his mind, he gave thousands of cows to the Brahmanas. When Vasudeva was convinced that the newborn child was the Supreme Personality of God himself, he bowed down with folded hands and began to offer him prayers. At that time, Vasudeva was in the transcendental position, and he became completely free from all fear of Kamsa. The newborn baby was also flashing his effulgence within the room in which he appeared. So, I mean, obviously, you know, God appears in your room. You're not going to be afraid of anything. So, Vasudeva was a Kshatriya, so he wasn't personally afraid. He was afraid for the safety of his child. Actually, that's the point. But Kshatriyas are not personally afraid, but they're afraid because their business is to protect others, especially to protect children, women, old people, and cows. Vasudeva then began to offer his prayers. My dear Lord, I can understand who you are. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul of all living entities, and the Absolute Truth. You have appeared in your own eternal form, which is directly perceived by us. I understand that because I am afraid of Kamsa, you have appeared just to deliver me from that fear. You do not belong to this material world. You are the same person who brings about the cosmic manifestation simply by glancing over material nature. One may argue that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates the whole cosmic manifestation simply by his glance, cannot come within the womb of Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva. To eradicate this argument, Vasudeva said, my dear Lord, it is not a very wonderful thing that you have appeared within the womb of Devaki, because the creation was also made in that way. You were lying in the causal oceans, Mahavishnu, and by your breathing process, innumerable universes came into existence. Then you entered into each of the universes as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Then again you expanded yourself as Shiradakshaya Vishnu and entered into the hearts of all living entities and even within the atoms. Therefore, your entrance into the womb of Devaki is understandable in the same way. You appear to have entered, but you are simultaneously all-pervading. We can understand your entrance and non-entrance from material examples. In other words, Krishna never touches the material energy. He appears to be here, in one sense he is here, but he doesn't touch matter because he's completely Satchitananda Vigraha. The total material energy remains intact even after being divided into 16 elements. The material body is nothing but the combination of the five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. That's called Pancha Mahabhuta. Whenever there is a material body, it appears that such elements are newly created, but actually the elements are always existing outside of the body. Similarly, although you have appeared as a child in the womb of Devaki, you are also existing outside. You're always in your abode, but still you can simultaneously expand yourself into millions of forms. We talked about this many, many times before in regard to the Brahma Samhita verse Advaita Chuta Nadi Vananta Gopalantyam Prama Purisham Navayovanam Cha Vedavishu Dorlabham Adorlabham Atma Bhakto Go and the Madhapat Adi Purisham Tamaham Bhajami. You are one, but you appear in many different forms and still the same person. That's incredible. And we talked about this in relationship with Balaram. Balaram and Krishna are the same person, but they appear to be two different persons, but they are the same person, and they were able to interact as if they were two different persons, but they are both the same person. And Lord Vishnu, Krishna, Nrisimha, they're all the same person acting different ways simultaneously. There's that big word there. simultaneously expand yourself into millions of forms. So, we're in chapter 3, in the middle of the purport, or towards the beginning of the purport. Oh, not purport, sorry, these aren't purports. In the middle of the chapter. You know, we're thinking of verses and purports. So, let's take some questions. We got a few minutes. We will unmute you, or allow you to unmute yourselves, and you can ask whatever questions your heart desires, as long as it's auspicious. Okay, Chitralika, what's your question?
Hello, Gurudev, my obeisances. You just read that one who factually understands the birth and pastimes of Krishna becomes eligible for going to the spiritual world. So what does it mean to actually understand those pastimes?
Understand, it means to realize with full faith, not just to understand theoretically. To have full faith and realize that Krishna's Janma Kama Chame Divyam, Krishna's appearance and activities are transcendental. And also to realize that everything within this material world is temporary. You know, it's actually a lot of realization and a lot of faith, but it means full faith. That's what it means. All right? Not just say, well, it's transcendental. I know it's transcendental, therefore, I'm going back to God. It doesn't work like that. You have to really know with the essence of your being completely. Okay, good question. Alrighty. So, who is the next person? Oh, here's a question in the chat window, which I just saw. It seems to us that Krishna is Atmaram. Yes. If one wants to see some important person, one can usually manage it by finding out what they need or desire, arrange some meeting for a mutual benefit, but Krishna doesn't need anything, so he can't be compelled to meet us in this way. But because he loves us, Jivas, he reveals himself anyway for our benefit. How wonderful is this? I can't really understand it. I don't think anybody can understand it. Krishna really, he's Atmaram, he doesn't need anything, but he wants us. That's love. When you have, all right, let's take an ordinary couple, you know, to be traditional, man and woman, or whatever. Let's take an ordinary couple. They are getting some need fulfilled by that relationship. So they need it. They're not really thinking completely. I mean, there may be some thought of helping the other person. But they're not really thinking of, you know, what can I do for you and forget about me? You know, they're thinking, basically, they may not be aware of it. It may be subconscious. They're thinking, what can I get? I have this need. I mean, it's not a nefarious thing. They have certain needs to fulfill. And so, but Krishna has no need to fulfill. Unless you term his need for your welfare. Yeah, that's actually a need. So, but otherwise, Krishna has no need. Lakshmi, Sahasra, Sata, Sambrahma, Savyamanam, Govindamadi, Purusham, Daham, Tamaham Bhajami. Krishna has unlimited Lakshmis who have been doing, or are ready to serve him, are massaging his lotus feet. Whew. So what is it? And Krishna can create more. Krishna's not even dependent on those Lakshmis. You know, Krishna, just like the story of Narayan Rishi was meditating, the twins, sons of Dharma, were meditating, and Indra came and he tried to attract them by presenting them with so many dancing heavenly society girls. And Narayan Rishi just yawned. And when he yawned, he created more society girls, or more dancing girls, especially this girl, Urvasi. And Narayan Rishi said to Indra, if you like her, take her back with you. And so that's how Urvasi came about. So, yeah, it is quite amazing. I mean, understanding Krishna I don't think so. He's a chincha. We have this chincha word that's usually used in relationship to our philosophy of a chincha beta 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 tata chincha beta 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 tata. But actually, Krishna consciousness or understanding the nature of God is a chincha. How can you understand someone who is infinite and also localized simultaneously? That is Kalki Avatar, also Shaktavesh Avatar. I don't remember. You have to ask him when he comes.
No, Guruji, like yesterday you said in the class, like Buddha avatar was Buddha Sarira, so it was a Shaktivesh avatar instead of the Rupa.
Buddha is a yes, the Shaktavesh Avatar.
So in the same, and Jayadev Goswami, when I yesterday was hearing the same, after you said it, it says Kalki Sarira. So Kalki, Buddha Sarira and Kalki Sarira in Jayadev Goswami.
No,
And
that doesn't mean anything. Also, he says Halada Rupa or Rama Sharira. It doesn't mean what, it doesn't indicate whether someone is Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva. Anyway, you'll have to ask Kalki, and you'll probably be around when he comes.
I would be around, yeah.
Yeah, you'll definitely be around. No, that's not cursing you. I mean, that's just a joke. Okay, so Gopal, you have a question?
Yes, Gurudev, thank you. Please send my obeisances. So we can't understand Krishna, but at the same time, isn't it our duty as an aspiring devotee to try to understand Krishna so that we can understand what he
Try
wants?
to please Krishna.
Yeah. So
We can
we're
try to
trying to
understand certain aspects about Krishna, but to understand them fully, like Lord Brahma said, other people may say they understand Krishna, but I don't.
Yeah, Lord Shiva said that too.
Yeah, so you can try to understand certain things. I mean, I obviously understand a little bit about a chincha beta beta Tattva philosophy. I understand that Krishna plays his flute. That's certainly basic understanding.
So
But
in regards.
to understand Krishna is not possible. You can understand certain factors.
Yeah. So in regards to you were saying Krishna has no needs, and yet, an ordinary couple in the material world has needs, and there's nothing wrong with that. And, reading your book, Empathic Communication, we understand that it's natural that all living entities have authentic needs. So if we're part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna has no needs, where do our needs come from?
Where do our needs come from? Because we're tiny. So Krishna could fulfill his own needs. I mean, in one sense, you could say Krishna has needs. He has needs for fun, but he's fulfilling himself. So it's not an external need-fulfilling strategy. Whereas with ourselves, the need fulfillment has to be focused externally. I mean, yes, Krishna need. You don't say Krishna need. He is having fun. A need indicates a lack of something.
Right.
Krishna certainly doesn't lack something. So the only thing he lacks is us, is our love. But to say that someone needs something indicates they lack it. Krishna doesn't lack anything. Krishna's just enjoying all the time. And also, Krishna's beyond time. When you talk about needs, it actually indirectly indicates the time factor. Because I don't have this now, and I would like to have it in the future. But Krishna's beyond time, so how can you say that Krishna has needs? Doesn't make sense.
Thank you, Gurdip.
Okay, thank you very much. And Jamasvi is just a few days away, and so we're on chapter 3. We did 2b to 3a. And tomorrow, hopefully, if the world hasn't ended, we will continue this Krishna book. It's nice to be reading Krishna book right before a Janmashtami. And I guess that's it. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki.